doctors report to the studio. You're live in 2 minutes.
This is the Data Doctor's 2 minute drill.
Brandon, look at this.
I'm looking.
Is it this one or is it this one?
What's the difference?
Which one looks better to you?
Same to me. I mean, what's the difference? One's black, one's white.
You're staring at the Retina display on one of them.
So you've got two iPads there, and one of them is the new iPad. Some
people call
it the HD or the iPad 3, and one's the iPad 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a tough time telling the difference.
And a lot of people are. What's so revolutionary about it?
Did you know in some of our own little independent tests that aren't super fancy, but more people picked the iPad 2 as the better-looking display than the new iPad when we took high-resolution photos and showed them?
When Apple went crazy and took the old iPhone and went from the 3G to the 4, that went into the Retina display, and it was a noticeable difference.
Yes, that small screen made a big difference, but
right.
For some reason on the big screen, doesn't translate so much.
And so people are going crazy over the iPad and the Retina display, and wow, this is revolutionary, and it looks fantastic, and your pictures are this, and okay, you still can't read the thing in the broad daylight.
Right.
You can't see it. I don't see text as any crisper, sharper, better. People who look at it can't see a difference.
But it's faster.
Okay.
So we're hyped about a little bit of speed and some measurable but not noticeable difference in display quality, and that's the new iPad.
Again, Brandon, what am I missing here? Because I am not seeing a big deal about this new iPad.
And for those that don't listen regularly, Spanky's the Apple fanboy, so if he doesn't see the difference, if he's saying this is not a big deal, it's not a big deal.
I'm saying Apple screwed up on this one. It's not that great.
Yeah.
The 2 minute drill. Stand by.
Cue intro music in 5 seconds.
4, 3, 2.
Live from Data Doctors HQ.
This is the Data Doctors radio program, delivering tech knowledge for your technology.
It's time to listen, laugh, and learn. And I'd like to thank each and every one of you for being here on the Data Doctors radio program, although I won't because I don't know how many there are, and that would take too long anyway.
Every week, we help thousands of people in our stores all across the country, and then we come to this radio station. We help you on the weekend right here just by listening to us.
We are the Data Doctors, one doctor short this week, but it's Brandon here, Spanky across from me, here to provide education and entertainment. We like to call it
edutainment. Hey, you already know driving is dangerous enough, but texting and driving even worse. Now we've got a new warning for you.
Also, thinking about giving your old tech to your kid, you might want to see what its trade-in value is worth first.
And what's eating up your smartphone memory?
Data Doctors radio program.
So the dangers of Facebooking and driving. Turns out they're similar to the dangers of putting on makeup and driving, combing your hair and driving,
texting and driving,
eating your favorite fast food and driving. All these things fall into this big classification of distracted driving. But the reason we're talking about Facebooking and driving is because this past week, a young teenage girl, and teenage I'm using loosely, I think she was like 19, 20-ish, somewhere in there, so older teen, maybe into her early 20s. Was driving on a trip, a long 4-hour drive, and she's posting updates to Facebook and texting, and ran into the back of a semi truck going up a hill, a tanker, and the truck was going, they think, about 15 miles an hour, and they don't see that the brakes were ever applied, and they got cell phone records and things, and they saw that she had been updating just seconds earlier and texting, and she was so interested in what she was doing that she completely didn't see a huge semi-truck in front of her, and now her parents, her family, is trying to create or trying to push for legislation on a national basis that would make this an illegal act. And what I'm wondering is, not to get political, but if I'm sure she knew that this wasn't a great idea. If there was a law, would that change anything?
Not only did she know it wasn't a great idea, she had posted just moments before the accident. In fact, there's a quote, "I can't discuss this now. Driving and Facebooking isn't safe. Ha ha." And then slammed into the back of the truck and died. Taylor Sawyer was only 18 years old. She knew better, but she was still doing it. And I think part of the problem, Brandon, is you can't legislate intelligence. You can't legislate
And there are states that already have distracted driving laws, and some of them call them texting laws. I know somebody that lives in California, and he got pulled over. He was sitting at a stoplight, stopped at a stoplight, picked up his phone to quickly check the time and set it down, and there was a motorcycle cop that happened to be parked, or not parked, but in the lane next to him, and was looking through the window, pulled him over, gave him a ticket. And he's one of these guys that he doesn't answer the phone if he's driving. He not only doesn't do hands-free, he doesn't do any of it. And the deal was paying a small fine and goes on with life. And I'm thinking that if they really want to get serious about making these laws noticed and apply, they got to treat this almost like you treat a DUI. You got to get crazy on people before people are going to take notice.
Yeah, you know, Facebooking, texting, doing makeup, those are things that you shouldn't be doing when you're driving.
We all know this.
Do we need to stay that connected in this world? I mean, do you remember 20 years ago, 15 years ago, you stopped at a payphone if you needed to?
Right.
Do we have to be that connected every moment of every waking minute of the day?
I think some of us, and I'll put myself into this category, I know it's not a good idea, and I generally avoid it, and it doesn't happen. But there are times when it's almost, I don't know, it rings or it bleeps, and you want to look down to see what it is, and you find yourself doing it, and then you know, your brain's already engaged thinking about how you're going to answer it. And so some of us need, we almost need this. If there was an app I could install that would make, that would sense that I'm moving at a rate greater than 25 miles an hour, so obviously I can't be running or walking or doing this on my own. I must be on, you know, in a vehicle.
Right.
Then block, and it wouldn't let me, and there was no way for me to disable it without like pulling over. See, that kind of thing. I almost need something like that for me.
Right.
So I wonder how many of us there are that for some reason we're not like adult enough to be able to set that aside for a second.
See, I'm able to put my smartphone in my iPhone in airplane mode when I go to bed at night. I need to start doing that when I drive.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, that would be a smart thing. Speaking of smartphones, from the Duh file, that would be Duh file. Verizon says all future smartphones will use the 4G LTE service.
Wait, they said all?
All.
What happens 20 years from now when 4G LTE is this funny old service that nobody uses anymore?
Well, they're saying all for now, which begs the question, the iPhone 5, that's probably going to be a 4G phone, I'm guessing.
For some people, the iPhone 4S is now a 4G phone.
We'll talk about that later. Anyway, this and everything we talk about on the show is in one place, datadoctors.com/radio.
Hey, we've had a ton of questions on Facebook this week, and we'll tell you where that is in just a second. If you ever have a question and we're not on the radio, you can ask that too. What's that place, Spanky?
Facebook.com/datadoctors. And that's where Gail popped in this week. He says his desktop Windows XP machine started showing warnings about a threat detected. I looked at it, and it referenced ping.exe. The warning kept popping up every 30 to 50 seconds. I checked all these things that I needed to check, processes, performance, and each time it pops up, the CPU jumps to 100% usage.
Whoa, he's got a lot going on there.
Yeah, there's something going on. He's used Avast, lob at malware. He shut down the computer. Now he's afraid to reopen it. He Googled ping.exe and says it's a Trojan. Or is it a Trojan?
Right. Well, if you Google just about any kind of, pick a real file name that should exist on every machine, then ping.exe is a utility that should exist on every machine, right? You're going to find some sites that tell you it's dangerous, and you're going to find some sites that tell you it's safe. And the ones that tell you it's dangerous likely are going to try to sell you something to detect whether it's the dangerous one or not. And so it's really tough these days to take just a .exe file, Google it, and find out the real deal on whether it's safe or whether it's not safe. But the fact that this is popping up and you're getting the activity and you said you checked these things and 100% CPU, all this stuff is leading to a strong suspicion that there's something not right going on, specifically something malware-related, virus, spyware, Trojan, worm, what have you.
Right. So at this point, I would probably start up in safe mode. That would be step number one.
Yeah. See if the problem goes away or stays. Safe mode is not a way you operate long-term. It's just a way to kind of help troubleshoot and figure out, is this something that happens all the time or not? So in safe mode, if it's not happening, then it raises the suspicion bar even higher that this is something not good, and you got to get in there with some tools to clean this thing up or enlist the help of a friend or a pro or whatever it be.
And Gail, don't use a can of Lysol. I hear that's very bad for the innards of your PC.
Hey, coming up, don't donate it. Trade it in.
And Google always gets a bad rap, but once in a while, some good comes of it. Get your tissues ready.
It's all coming up right here on the Data Doctors radio program.
It's a very heartwarming story.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to a heartwarming story for a change.
We need those.
No more tech.
No more.
Well, maybe a little bit of tech.
To repair or not to repair? That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slow and sluggish startup of old, or to take arms by replacing
with
new.
What are you talking about?
Repairing or replacing? Which one should I do?
Well, it's easy to figure that out. You bring it to Data Doctors. We do something called a PC physical. It's $59. We go through all the hardware, all the software, and we help answer that question. Yeah. And the best part, we apply the $59 to either one.
Yeah, no more guessing.
I thought the only option was to replace.
Just because they're getting slow doesn't mean you have to replace
it. You know, sometimes they get really, really slow.
Yeah, but for most folks, you can save quite a bit of dough and not replace, repair instead.
Yeah, and who wants to start all over again and have to reload all your programs? And you know what? Buying a new computer is rarely the right solution. So figure it out the right way.
We can help. Just go to datadoctors.com and click book an appointment.
And find out whether you should repair or replace.
Repair or not to repair? Now, that's no longer a question.
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.
Hey, your old iPad. You know the one that's sitting around that your kids are playing with and scratching the snot out of the screen?
Are we going to call the new iPad the old new iPad someday?
I don't know, but it's worth some dough.
How much?
We're going to tell you how much. Don't give it to your kids. Trade it in. What's it worth,
Brandon? I'll give you $50-$60 for it.
It's worth more than that. Find out how much more at datadoctors.com/radio.
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.
I'm telling you, if it's functional and working, anybody listening right now, you post on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/datadoctors. Say, I want to sell you my iPod for $50. Sold.
iPad.
That's what I said. Did I say pod?
You said iPod.
Oh, I meant pad.
Okay.
I'll buy it for $50 right now.
Earlier in the program, we told you we had a lot of questions on Facebook this week. Jennifer popped in with her question, and this was one relating to the iPhone. She was hoping to upgrade her iPhone 4S 16 gig to iOS 5.1 when she got the notification that she needs a gig of space to upgrade. Will it take that much forever, or does it just need that much to install, then take less when it's already installed and in use?
So what she's asking is the gig of space. I could probably free up a gig for the install by taking some photos and music off, doing the upgrade, and then putting them back. But what I want to know is what she's asking is, if I give up that gig, does it take it forever? Because that's what the new OS needs, or does it just need it to do the upgrade, and then it gives back most of what it took?
So because Jennifer asked, we did a little digging. And we came up with a real answer for you, Jennifer. And the answer is, for the install, it takes a little more space. But once it's up and running, it takes a little less space, about 774 meg. So it's not a whole heck of a lot less, you know.
Wait a minute. So when you're done, it needs the gig to do it, but it only gives back like a quarter of that gig?
Yes.
What all new is in there that, I mean, I didn't notice a whole lot of new junk that it needs this much more space. Does it have more language stuff for Siri or what the heck?
Yeah, depending on the device. So it's device dependent.
Right. So if you have a 3GS versus a 4 versus a 4S,
correct.
Right, that changes the package, so to speak, that you're going to need and therefore the space it's going to take, not only short-term, but long-term.
Right. So, depending on your device, that's the amount of space it'll eat. Now, what's in there that's magical and different? I don't know. But, man, it's a hog.
So, if she has a iPhone 4S, maybe she's better off not doing the upgrade.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've got the 4S, and, you know,
other than the 4G symbol, I don't know if I noticed anything cool and spectacular.
Yeah, no, not really.
And by the way, you only get that if you're on the AT&T, and a little secret for you, it doesn't make your service faster. It just changes the logo to make you think it makes your service faster.
Wait a second. Are you kidding
me? Now, your service is technically faster there than if you had Verizon or if you had Sprint. It is definitely a faster service. And to be fair, almost everybody other than Verizon who advertises their 4G service, it's faster than all theirs, and in some cases, faster than Verizon's, too. So
I have an admission to make, Brandon, since we're talking about Jennifer's phone here.
Yes.
So I've done this with a few friends who have the 4S and who have upgraded the iOS.
Yes, I know where you're going. Go ahead.
I've told them to, I said, don't use your Wi-Fi. Use the 4G service. And take note. I want to know how much better the service is.
Right.
Are you noticing the increased speed? Every one of them. Every one of them. Oh, my God. This thing is lightning fast now.
People, this is the placebo effect. It does not magically upgrade your hardware. It only changes the logo.
Brandon, I've done it to 4 people, and every one of them report the exact same results. Oh, man, this is so much faster. They have no idea.
People are ding-dongs.
They are. Hey, speaking of ding-dongs, are you tired of the ding-dong in your house?
Which ding-dong are we talking about?
The doorbell. Ding-dong.
Okay.
Well, they already have customized ringtones for your smartphone. Why not your front doorbell, too?
There's some doorbells that play like Dixie and all the different holiday things.
No. Now there's one that can actually play songs that you want piped into it. It's just like ringtones for your phone.
So when you show up, la cucaracha, la cucaracha. No?
You want to find out how to get them, go to datadoctors.com/radio. You can see what we're talking about.
Ding dong ringtones.
Ding dong ringtones. But they're not ding dong. I mean, like you can have in the club and dun 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 dun.
That's in the club?
I don't know. That's my version of it.
Moving on, Google.
Yes.
Everybody calls them the big, huge, awful, horrible Google. Evil Google.
The evil Google. Well,
evil Google.
Evil because they own everything. They're everywhere. They're omnipresent.
Well, you ready with your, I was going to say with your diapers, but I think I mean your tissues. So Google Earth, that's the taking Google Maps and throwing it on crazy steroids. It's a free product from Google, much like most of their products, right?
Yep.
Google Earth reunited a man with his family. And you're thinking to yourself, well, how would Google Earth do such a thing? So here's a story. And we've got the full link, and you can get the full story. And it's worth the five-minute read. I go back years ago. A young boy got aboard a train.
Can I do my Disney read?
Okay.
25 years ago, a young boy boarded a train.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Anyway.
Don't they always start with that?
He was in a railway station in his village in India, Khandwa, India. And he and his brother were messing around in the train yard, got on this train, and like boys will do, they sat down, they were playing, they were talking, they both fell asleep. The train motion put them to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
They woke up 10 hours later, 900 miles away.
It's a fast train.
From their home village. And they had no money. They had no way to get back. They didn't even know how to explain where they lived.
So fast forward the story. They become orphans. People adopt them. Years and years and years go by. This guy has always tried to figure out where it was he came from because he didn't even know where it was as far as the name of the village or whatever. And he's messing around on Google Earth looking for familiar things. And I recognize this. I recognize this.
Right. He sees a landmark on Google Earth that clicks this memory of his village as a child, gets on a plane. He's now a successful businessman. He was adopted by an Australian couple.
Right.
Goes to India. And
to this place.
Yes, to this village. And Shiru is now been reunited with his family because of Google Earth after 25 years. That's an amazing story.
They could turn that into a Disney movie, I'm pretty sure. Or at least a miniseries.
Yeah, I mean, but can you imagine? That's, I mean, look, they do a movie about a dog who finds his way home across the country. This is a little more dramatic than that. This is a man who, you know, was separated from his family.
Well, there's some cool things. If you've never used Google Earth, you can take, I mean, everybody who's listening, it's worth the couple of minutes to go Google Earth, right? And get it installed, download, whatever. And then put in your home address and watch what it does. It does like this cool flyover thing where it gets you to your home address. And now put in the place where you grew up and it'll take you from there and it'll fly you to the place you grew up. Just that alone is kind of cool. You can zoom out and look at, you know, the earth as a whole. You can zoom all the way in with a lot of detail, which is kind of surprising. And it's like one of those crazy futuristic movies where you're kind of amazed at the technology and what it can do. Now, it's not live, so don't go run out
right.
The front door and try to wave and... It's not going to work that way.
And later on, we're going to tell you some places you can't see with Google. When we come back, do you bank with your Android? There's a threat you need to know about.
Also, who has time to watch the news? What if the news came to you when you wanted it? Stick around.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Hey, Spanky.
Yes, sir.
You know anybody that got that new iPad?
Yeah, I know a few people who got the new iPad.
Well, we all know it's a hot seller, or maybe not. Apparently, it's so hot, they actually overheat. No, literally. and they give you an error message. As always, Apple has nothing to say. Yet.
The silence. Apple, come on.
Delivering technology for your technology.
The Data Doctors Radio Program.
Of course, if you want more on that or anything we talk about anytime, all the time, is datadoctors.com/radio for the links.
Including an alert that we posted this week about Android malware. You know, malware are those bad things. They exist in the computer world, and now they're starting to show up. Malware is starting to show up in the smartphone world. And unfortunately, you can get malware by getting apps from places other than your provider. Like, you know, iTunes gives you your apps.
Right, you get it from the App Store. Right.
Android has the Android Marketplace. Excuse me, no. It's, what's it called now?
Google Play.
Google Play, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, which makes no sense.
But especially in the Android world, there are lots of alternatives. You don't have to get things from only the Google Play or Marketplace, whatever they're calling it this week, right?
Yeah.
This is part of what people like about it. And so if you know what you're doing, it may be safe to go elsewhere to get apps. But if you don't know where you're doing or what you're doing, it may be very dangerous. And particularly, there's a warning out about a bunch of now scam apps that look and feel like mobile banking apps. And so insert your bank name, right? And these guys do a great job of quickly going and getting the logos and the color schemes and the fonts and the what have you to make it look like your bank app. And it's designed to have you put in your username and your password, and off you go. And, of course, it says that's not the right username and password. And so you do it two or three times and then figure out, well, maybe something's wrong. And so you maybe get a different version of the same app, and that one works. But what you just did was, since they know the bank name, obviously, you gave the bad guys your username and password to your banking site. That's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
And so you've got to be very careful where you get the apps from. Also, most banks that do smartphone / mobile banking, they have some kind of process. Like, I know my bank, you have to log in through your regular account on a regular computer, and you have to set it up for a mobile profile. And then it sends your mobile phone like a text message that has a secret code that you then put into the app the first time to sort of register it so that it helps make sure that you've got the right app, right? It legitimizes everything.
Make sure you got the right one.
Right. So the lesson here, or the message here, is get with your bank, and whether you do it online or in person at a branch or on the phone, and you reach out to them and contact them through whatever mechanism you feel comfortable with, and find out the source. Where do you get this thing from? Whether it's through their website, whether it's through a marketplace or an app store or what have you. But don't believe when you go hunting for your Wells Fargo or your Chase or your whatever,
right,
that necessarily that app is really legit.
And you know, Brandon, one of the things that I'm seeing now, and I actually checked about 7 different banks when we saw the story originally, a lot of the banks are now putting direct links to the iPhone apps, the Android apps, and the BlackBerry apps right on their site.
Right.
So instead of going shopping for it, go to the bank itself.
Right. In fact, do it on your smartphone. A lot of them, as soon as you try to hit the homepage or go to the login to my account, it says, oh, we have an app for this. And there's a link right there, and it takes you right to generally the marketplace or the app store or whatever.
Yeah. So be safe and do it the right way. Hey, if you have a smartphone, you already know how great location-based reminders can be, right?
Yes.
Okay. What if your laptop could work the same way?
Okay.
So you go somewhere with your laptop, and then when you open up your laptop, you get a location-based reminder. Geo Notepad is a location-based reminder app for Google Chrome. Very cool.
So it doesn't matter Windows or Mac or Linux or whatever.
It doesn't matter.
It's based on the browser in this case.
Correct.
Interesting.
And we've got a link for it at datadoctors.com/radio. And now, time for a little snack. I said snack. It's live radio. What do you want? It never works as fast as you want it to.
So for people listening, Spanky's got his phone.
I'm waiting for
up
my
to
snack.
The microphone, and he's trying to use an app that we're going to fill you in on what it is and what it does in a moment.
Can you shoot me in the head now?
But
make the pain
moment,
go away.
It's not working. I'm trying to vamp for you so you have
my
time.
My app is not working. It's just spinning. Anyway, let me talk to you about my little favorite new app called Snacker.
When it works.
When it works. And it actually works all the time except today. It's not working for
me.
So
what is Snacker? What does it do? And how much?
So Snacker is a free app. And what Snacker does is, if you don't have time to sit down and watch the news, because a lot of people are busy, you're running around, and we get news delivered to our smartphones now. We go to news sites and we look at CNN, we look at sports, what?
We do?
Well, a lot of people do.
Oh.
My app is truly not working, Brandon.
It's on fail mode.
That's the beauty of live radio. So what Snacker does is Snacker creates a personalized newscast for you. and it delivers it via audio. So you could be in your car, click Snacker, and when it works, it will launch, and this lovely British man will come on and read the top headlines for you in the categories that you choose, and you can set those up. So, of course, I have a lot of tech-heavy categories, and it'll give you all of the news you need in those categories off of an app.
So if you're a news junkie and you don't have your own live radio program where where the app won't work, of course, as soon as we're off the air, it'll right into action.
I'm really pissed. I'm gonna write to these people.
Course, you're trying to figure out Snacker and what are we saying. So snack like like you're hungry in the middle of the day and you need a snack with an R at the end, or easier, better yet, datadoctors.com/radio. We'll have a link.
Really depressed.
Spanky promises it works unless you're on live radio.
I don't know why maybe it's something to do with the Wi-Fi here. I don't know, but it's really upsetting me. Anyway, it's a terrific app.
So Facebook, to switch gears on you here, we all know that it's this cool free service that we sort of have a love-hate relationship with. And I think we've all heard by now that ads, they're already there, but more are coming.
Right.
Well, there's a way that you can opt out of Facebook social ads. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. How do you do that?
Well, there's step-by-step instructions. Of course, on the air, it's not going to happen. So datadoctors.com/radio for those as well. Hey, coming up, are you into yourself? Do you have a ton of Facebook friends?
400.
Are you a narcissist? I'm not talking to just you, Spanky.
No. Plus, smartphones and dumb apps. What's eating up your memory?
It's all coming up right here on the Data Doctors radio program.
Can't believe this app failed on me.
Well, don't worry. We're going to break. It'll work in a sec.
It's still failing.
Yeah, Snacker.
Stupid app. To repair or not to repair? That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slow and sluggish startup of old, or to take arms by replacing
with
new.
What are you talking about?
Repairing or replacing? Which one should I do?
Well, it's easy to figure that out. You bring it to Data Doctors. We do something called a PC physical. It's $59. We go through all the hardware, all the software, and we help answer that question. Yeah. And the best part, we apply the $59 to either one.
Yeah, no more guessing.
I thought the only option was to replace.
Just because they're getting slow doesn't mean you have to replace
it. You know, sometimes they get really, really slow.
Yeah, but for most folks, you can save quite a bit of dough and not replace, repair instead.
Yeah, and who wants to start all over again and have to reload all your programs? And you know what? Buying a new computer is rarely the right solution. So figure it out the right way.
We can help. Just go to datadoctors.com and click book an appointment.
And find out whether you should repair or replace.
Repair or not to repair? Now, that's no longer a question.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Ah, who has time to talk? Not us.
Apparently, we have plenty of time to talk.
Apparently not teens. Just how many texts do they send per day?
A billion.
Not quite a billion, but check it out at datadoctors.com/radio.
Tech knowledge for your technology.
Data Doctors radio program.
Hey, before we went to break, we were talking about that Snacker app. Did you get that thing working off the air there finally?
I think I did. It was having some issues with the Wi-Fi here at the radio.
Turn that music down.
Times. French police say they have cornered suspect in school shooting. Three French police were wounded in a standoff with a man claiming Al-Qaeda ties who is suspected of killing four people at a Jewish school this week.
That's good.
From Mashable. Seven reasons you should attend Mashable Connect 2012.
So, anyway, it's a customized newscast, and I now have to shut it off.
Yeah, good luck with that. And it works, by the way, on iDevices. Sorry, Android folk, it ain't there yet. But I'll imagine if this thing is popular enough, it'll get there. Can you... Just throw it on the ground. Thank you.
Anyway, Snacker app, very cool. And it does work. It's been working for me for weeks. And of course, the day I go to use it on the air, that's what happens.
Hey, Scott on Facebook asks, I recently noticed that every time I open up a new window in Explorer, a Babylon search site appears. I have checked my settings and I can't find where I've set it to this site. What can you tell me about Babylon search? And how can I remove it from my PC? My operating system is Windows 7. Thank you, Scott.
Now, I don't operate in the Windows environment, but isn't Babylon one of those like plug-in overlay things that goes that kind of changes the way your browser looks?
I don't know. I thought you would like looked at this question and done some kind of research before we got on about it. So well, the guy's asking a question. I read it and nobody knows the answer.
No.
That's awesome.
No. It's a piece of software that's installed. It's like a tool that you overlay on Internet Explorer.
Oh, like a I know what you're talking about. It's one of those like
I'm using the wrong term.
They call it a browser helper object is the technical term.
Thank you.
But it's designed to sort of reskin Internet Explorer, and generally these kinds of things sneak in oftentimes when you go and get some kind of free download or something, and you're clicking next degree, and somewhere in there was this little tiny checkbox that says we're going to add this thing, that at the end of it they're trying to change your search, and there's a money making aspect to this where they direct you towards sites where they get paid.
A couple of months ago I had that on my MacBook.
Yeah,
and I was using Firefox at the time. I wasn't using Chrome that day, and I was downloading something for the radio show because I wanted to test it so we can talk about it. And when I did the exact same thing our customers do that you out there listening to us do. You do the next degree.
Right.
And all of a sudden, my browser turned into this hideous, it was cartoon icons and temperature gauges, and it had a bunch of crap on there that was so useless, and I couldn't get rid of it.
Right, so usually you can go in, like in the Windows world, you can go into your control panel and then the add remove programs, or the programs and features, depending on which version of Windows you're running, and you can uninstall some of that garbage. The other thing you can do is within Internet Explorer, if you go under Tools and then Internet Options, there's an add-ons tab or section, depending on the version of Internet Explorer you're using, and you can disable or remove some of those add-ons that are generally going to be called like search bars or different kinds of skinning tools that
right.
just disable and kill and kind of get rid
now,
of.
Now, Scott, if all else fails, the last thing you can do is in Internet Explorer, if you go into the Advanced tab in the upper right-hand corner, you can hit the reset button.
There's a reset all, actually.
Right,
yeah.
And that will basically wipe it back to factory, i.e. new, right?
Sort of. As long as the stuff that got installed is playing according to the rules, yes. Sometimes you got to get a little deeper than that.
So there. And next time I'll call it by the right name, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Good deal.
If you like all the tips, tricks, and warnings we give you and all the other great info, we can deliver it right to your inbox.
To their inbox?
Yes.
How do we do that?
You know what you got to do is subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Go to datadoctors.com/radio. Look for the newsletter icon.
Wait a minute. I know what you do when you find the newsletter icon.
What do?
You give us your email address.
Exactly.
And you hit the subscribe button.
And bingo, bongo, boingo, and you're in.
Thanks, Mac.
Yes, sir.
Are you a narcissist?
I don't know. I mean, I look at myself in the mirror and I think, it's pretty.
Do you look in the mirror and go,
dude,
dang, that man is attractive?
No, but what I do look in the mirror, I look in the mirror and I go, man, I've got a lot of friends on Facebook. I must be popular.
Yeah, we all kind of think that there's some weird quantity game that the number of friends somehow determines how cool you are, how popular you are, or whatever. And that's just not necessarily the case.
Yeah, so a new study says that there's a link between the number of Facebook friends you have and that you're a socially disruptive narcissist. Now, I would say that's true for a couple of people we know.
Do you know how many Facebook friends you have?
I have about 450, I think I last checked.
I'm clicking right now because I don't know the number.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in about 450. And so, but I think I look at this a little bit differently. I don't look at it as narcissism. I look at it as your friends interact with you and you have a lot of things to say and they like what you say and they interact with you. And it's not narcissistic. You just happen to be an expert in your field.
By the way, I'm not that cool, apparently. 265.
Oh, Brandon, you need to catch up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm happy the way it
but
is.
But I don't know how you equate narcissism with having a lot of friends. It just does to me. That doesn't. The two don't marry.
I don't know.
Well, you're no help.
I know that.
He's looking at me like you're a putz.
What else you got?
You're a putz.
Well, we all know the answer to that.
I know. Hey, by the way, did you catch that Twitter had a birthday this week?
Twitter had a birthday?
Yeah, March 21st, I think it was.
Okay.
They turned 6 years old.
6 years old. Oh, I remember when it was just this tiny little newborn app that people didn't use. And
when it was just, a tiny newborn app that people didn't use. You mean people are actually using it?
Well, yeah. I mean, they claim that they have, 120 million users now?
140 million, sir.
See, my point proven.
140 million users. And
those are the number of people that have ever signed up and ever sent at least one tweet, right?
Right.
So the number of people actively using it on a daily basis.
Two.
Like 10, yeah.
How many, tell me where Twitter is going.
How are they going to monetize this?
If Ken was here, he would be ashamed at us for even asking the question.
But I've got to ask the question. Consider me Joe Consumer. Where's Twitter going?
I think that there's a place for it where if you're looking to broadcast your issue, your question, I think as a question-asking tool or as a research tool from the search side, that there's some legs there. There's some things there. It's tough for a lot of folks to get their heads around what it is and the value of it, so most people just ignore it. And until they figure out how to get the masses interested, they've got a problem.
And speaking of questions, if you ever have a question for the program, you can hit us up, facebook.com/datadoctors.
Remember, as the show rolls on, if you miss any of it, you can always find the stuff we're talking about at datadoctors.com/radio, including our podcast for those who like to download and listen.
Hey, ever have a tech problem you need human help with? That's what we do all week long in our stores all across the country. We can help you in our stores, in your home, at your business. We can even remote right in over the internet and fix your stuff.
Sit tight. Hour number two is just ahead.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Data Doctors report to the studio. You're live in 2 minutes.
This is the Data Doctors 2 Minute Drill.
So the folks over at Microsoft,
the evil empire.
I don't know if it's the evil empire; it's the empire. They're putting in place a ban, not on owning or purchasing Apple products by their employees, but by the company funding those purchases.
Why would they do that? They develop products for Apple devices.
Like what again?
Microsoft Office.
Yeah, they do. So they do Word, Excel, whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For the Mac world, but that's
sure.
All they do. And Apple's been for a while threatening to not allow them to distribute anymore through their app store. And in fact, they've made that very difficult because they have their own competing suite. So Microsoft is just saying we're not going to supply our competitor because they don't reciprocate. What does Apple make for Microsoft? And by the way, I'm pretty sure over at Apple headquarters that there's nobody running a Windows box.
I'm thinking about it.
If they are, they're running a boot camp on their Apple device.
I still haven't come up with an answer for you.
Right. So is this really a bad thing? is this really Microsoft? Or is this Microsoft being smart saying, wait a minute, we're not going to fund the purchase of tools for our employees, a.k.a. mostly smartphones, right?
Sure.
iPhones and iPads. You need to go buy a Windows mobile device. If we're going to buy it, that's what we're buying you. And that's what they should do.
So you're saying this is akin to General Motors saying, look, we'll sell you a General Motors car, but you cannot buy a Toyota.
No. The company, if you drive a company car, it's not going to be a Toyota if you work for General Motors. It's
right.
Going to be a General Motors vehicle. Duh. I don't see that this is a big problem.
Okay.
And you, when we first talked about this, you were like, oh, that's silly. Why would they do that?
It is dumb.
No, it's not.
Well, here's the thing. Are you going to just destroy the relationship that Microsoft and Apple have developed?
It's already done.
Ugh.
The 2 Minute Drill. Stand by.
Cue intro music in 5 seconds.
4, 3, 2.
Live from Data Doctors HQ.
This is the Data Doctors radio program, delivering tech knowledge for your technology.
And the beat goes on. It is time to listen, laugh, and learn with the Data Doctors radio program.
Every week, we help thousands of people in our stores all across the country. Then on the weekends, we bring that experience, that expertise, that massive knowledge, and we bring it here on the radio for you for free.
We are the Data Doctors, Brandon across from me. Ken should be to the left, but he's not this week. And me, Spanky, here to provide you education and entertainment. We call it edutainment.
Hey, Brand A versus Brand B. What to look for when buying a PC?
Also, what would you do with $100 billion?
And should you or shouldn't you? If you ever had to ask yourself that question, you shouldn't. We'll explain.
Data Doctors radio program.
So you have a smartphone, right?
Everybody does.
But do you have dumb apps?
What do you mean, dumb apps? You mean like Angry Birds?
Apps that eat up all your memory, all the space inside your phone.
Well, you
like
know.
Like that lady earlier who had a 16-gig iPhone. She couldn't even do the upgrade because it's all eaten up with apps and data and stuff.
Right, and the iOS 5 eats up
734 megabytes
you.
On average.
Remember exactly what the number was. Yeah, so a lot of us have smartphones, and on those smartphones, in order to make those phones do what you like them to do, we have apps. But they're not apps eat up either a very small amount of space,
because they're not very, they're very, let's call them lightweight. And then there are some apps that are just called bloated. Those are the ones that are just, you know, your, for example, Netflix. Netflix is a bloated, heavy app.
Well, it's, I mean, think about it. You're watching live video. Of course, it's going to use a lot of the data stream that your provider gives you. And so we sort of intuitively know that. But there's things that you wouldn't expect to be super crazy bloated that it turns out that they kind of are.
For example?
For example, what we talked about.
I figured you were going there.
Movie streaming, the next big category, music. So a lot of people now don't have the music on the device because the device is limited, and so they start streaming that, whether it's Pandora, whether it's the Google Music, whether it's any one of the Spotify, you know, pick whatever it is. These things, tons of people are using a couple of hundred megabytes a month, some people up to 2 gigs a month just for music streaming.
So here's the thing. If you use Pandora, and I think everyone that I know knows what Pandora is, and if you don't know what Pandora is, go look. Pandora has an app for all of the smartphones. Pandora is
Spotify,
a streaming,
right?
Spotify, right? There's a streaming music service. I use Pandora when I'm in the car.
So check this out. Let me put this into quantities you can easily understand.
Okay.
For every minute of music you listen to, and an average song, let's say, is 3 minutes, right? So for every song, remember the old floppy disks that were actually not floppy, those 3.5-inch disks?
Yes.
Every minute is equivalent to about as much as you would put on one of those. So every song is about 3 of those. So start stacking that up on a one-hour drive, and you do that a half an hour to work, a half an hour from work, right?
Right.
5 days a week. Do the math on this, and on a monthly basis, that stack of disks is a really heavy stack. That computes to a lot of data usage.
And if, for those of you who are getting into the newer devices, the newer smartphones, a lot of people are starting to use games because they have nothing better to do with their time. Games eat up a tremendous amount of not only memory on the device, but of download time.
Right.
So just be careful, you know, and always you can check your data usage. But the smart thing is connect to a Wi-Fi.
Yeah, more and more of us are moving into plans because we're trying to save a few bucks. And we've also figured out that the Wi-Fi option lets you avoid using a lot of the carrier's data. So a lot of us are moving into these plans that have capped data. They're not unlimited. You've got 2 gigs a month. And doing the math we just had with that an hour a day of Pandora or Spotify, whatever, you're going to use up more than half of your data just with music. You haven't even got started yet, right? Your social media apps, Facebook, things like that. If you're on that thing constantly and you're not on Wi-Fi, you're chewing up a ton of bandwidth because what are you doing on that, right? You're not only checking people's updates and statuses, you're liking, you're posting, you're uploading pictures, you're watching YouTube videos. These things all consume a ton. So just be careful, just chill. We've got tips for things you can do to save on that data and more on this story, datadoctors.com/radio.
You know, we don't have Ken here to berate us for doing our little whisper.
Geek speak of the week.
Each and every week, this time of the radio program, we bring you a bit of the tech vernacular, something that people talk in the tech world about. They use the
geek
word
speak of the week.
I don't know how I could do that and talk at the same time. That's kind of hard. I got to be like a ventriloquist. This week's geek speak is a term that you may not recognize, you may never have seen before, but you've certainly clicked on one. And it's called permalink. Permalink. Of the week. I can't whisper.
Permalink is short for permanent link. And a permalink, well, it's just that. It's a link that lives beyond. So oftentimes, our radio show page is a great example of this. If you go to datadoctors.com/radio, it's going to take you to the latest radio show, the one we're doing right now with all the topics and all the links to all the things we're talking about.
Right.
But if you wanted to link to that page and specifically this show 6 months from now, if you sent somebody just to datadoctors.com/radio, it would take them to the show that was airing then, not the show now 6 months in the past, right? You get the math on that, the 6 months, right? So as soon as you go to datadoctors.com/radio, it actually forwards you to the latest radio show page, and that link that it forwards you to is the permalink. It is the one that will be for that show forever.
You know, Brandon, this kind of dawned on me just now as you said that. We did a video last week or the week before with you in it.
Yeah.
That referenced how to share something on Facebook.
The ladies were big into that, by the way.
Right. That is actually a permalink.
Huh?
That little thing that we showed them to click, let's repost the video
so people
can get that.
Yes,
that is an actual permalink.
It is indeed. So this is commonly found, you'll find in blogs and things, and we treat the way we display the content for our radio program almost like a weekly blog entry, and then, of course, that coincides with us talking on the radio, and that's how we keep track of that. But permalink, that's just that. There might be a shortcut way to get there, but it's the thing that will get you there forever and always down the road, regardless of what new comes after the fact.
So a story that went kind of off the radar this last week was regarding Google and Google search getting a makeover.
This is so far off the radar, I don't even know about it, so tell me.
So Google search got a makeover, and of course, as I was reading this story, I'm trying to figure out, is Google search that inefficient, that ineffective, that we can't search, that they have to recreate it?
Last I checked, people used the heck out of Google search, and so did they really need to give it a makeover?
Apparently, they're changing some of the keywording, how it finds things. Jaguar, if you're looking for Jaguar, you're looking for the car, you're looking for the...
Oh, it's not the look and feel, it's the code underneath.
Right, to help make it
they did need
better search results for you. So it's pretty cool when they update it.
Hey, still ahead, buying a new PC, is there a difference in the brands? Of course there is. Stick around, we'll tell you about that.
Plus, got an extra $100 bill lying around? What do you do with it? We'll let you know.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
To repair or not to repair? That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slow and sluggish startup of old, or to take arms by replacing
with
new.
What are you talking about?
Repairing or replacing? Which one should I do?
Well, it's easy to figure that out. You bring it to Data Doctors. We do something called a PC physical. It's $59. We go through all the hardware, all the software, and we help answer that question. Yeah. And the best part, we apply the $59 to either one.
Yeah, no more guessing.
I thought the only option was to replace.
Just because they're getting slow doesn't mean you have to replace
it. You know, sometimes they get really, really slow.
Yeah, but for most folks, you can save quite a bit of dough and not replace, repair instead.
Yeah, and who wants to start all over again and have to reload all your programs? And you know what? Buying a new computer is rarely the right solution. So figure it out the right way.
We can help. Just go to datadoctors.com and click book an appointment.
And find out whether you should repair or replace.
Repair or not to repair? Now, that's no longer a question.
This is the Data Doctor.
I know what you're thinking to yourself. You're thinking, these guys sure are smart. No, these guys sure are silly.
Yes. Yeah,
whatever it is. If you like all the tips, the tricks, the warnings, all the other great info that we dispense here on the radio program, we can deliver all of it right to your inbox each and every week. All you do is subscribe to our weekly newsletter by going to datadoctors.com/radio. Look for the newsletter box, put in your email address, and off you go.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
We've been getting bombarded with Facebook questions this week. This week we seem to have a whole range.
Yeah, we like the bombardment, by the way. Keep them coming. Facebook.com/datadoctors.
Typically in a week, we get questions, and we'll notice week to week that sometimes it's the same question asked five different ways.
Yeah, it's a pattern of questions, sure.
Right. This week they were all over the place, every one of them. And Judy's was one of those just random standout questions. Judy is in the market for a new desktop computer. She said she's been checking the different brands, and they all seem to run about the same, what they can do, how much speed, all these things. She says, I'm now down to Compaq, HP, and Dell, and then I've just heard of this other one recently called Acer. Can you tell me if Acer is as good as the other ones, number one, and the price is sure better on my bank account?
So, Judy, let me see if I can give you and then everybody else listening a quick education here. Nobody these days really builds computers anymore. Everybody assembles components. And so what they do is they seek out components, and some of them look for the least expensive components. So take 500 gigabyte hard drive, and there's five different manufacturers, and whoever has the lowest bid, that's the winner, right? Some of them go after the best quality, and then some kind of try to take a medium balanced approach to that. And so the pricing generally is going to vary partly because of that part of the equation. The other part is going to be what happens after you buy it. So some of them will give you a 30-day warranty, some will give you a 60, a 90, some will give you a year. But in all those cases, that warranty generally doesn't cover anything that you're going to do to it, only covers what wasn't done right from the factory, which isn't going to be much. And it may or may not include support that's friendly to you, meaning it may or may not include somebody coming to your house or you having a physical place to take it. It may include you shipping and talking to people in foreign countries all over the world. So that's where a lot of money is saved, is on the after the sale portion of the experience. And we've had a saying for years now that when it comes to computers, because they're all assembled devices of other people's technology, it's not what you buy. And in this case, it's not the brand you buy, because you're right. You're going to get a lot of similar capabilities. And if you only got price to look at, then that's all you can look at. It's who you buy it from. And what I mean by that is when you have a problem, because at some point we all know owning a computer, whether it's a Mac or a PC, whether it's a Dell, a Compaq, an HP, or an Acer, which are all the brands she mentioned, at some point you're going to have trouble, whether it's real trouble with the device because something wasn't done right, or it's some trouble, a question you have, some issue you need help with, whatever it is, you're going to have that trouble. And so depending on where you purchase that, how you get help from whoever sold it to you is going to change. And so I would suggest that you look at the relationship after the fact and ask questions. Wherever you're going to purchase it from, you ask them, is this the place that if I have a problem, I bring it to? Or is this the place I can call? Or do I instead call some other number, some other place, right? Do I even have an option to bring it somewhere? Do I have to have somebody come to my home, which may not be convenient? Or do I have to ship it off somewhere, which is even less convenient? So these are all the kinds of questions, right? For example, when people come and talk to us about a computer, they don't oftentimes know that we sell computers, because as a general rule, that's not generally the first thing that makes the most sense for most folks. Most people can save a bunch of money by repairing what they have. But if it makes sense to replace, then we sell machines too. And we package everything we sell with things you need, like you need to get all the data off your old machine and put it on your new machine. Is the place that you're buying from going to help you with that? Is that going to happen with Dell or Compaq or HP or Acer or any of the brands for that?
Or do they charge you a fee to do that?
Right. So that and taking off all the junkware and getting it all updated and making sure it has real antivirus, it doesn't expire 10 minutes after you buy it. And then what happens when you have a problem down the road, right? You want a place that can service what they sell. And so I would suggest that unless price is really the super most important thing and you'll worry about what happens later, then find somebody, a local place that you can have a relationship with, that you can talk to, that's going to be there when you have a trouble, because the price difference is really not going to be much at all, if anything, and you're going to have a much better experience down the road. So that's my two cents.
Brandon, you ever wonder why we yawn?
Because what I was saying was boring to you?
No, it wasn't boring. Judy's question was a great question.
I wonder why yawning, every time I see somebody yawn, I feel like I have to yawn. Big jerk. Why is it so contagious?
We've got an answer for you. Check it out at datadoctors.com/radio. And that's where everything we talk about is all the time. So what could you buy with $100
billion? If I had $100
billion. If you had $100 billion,
I could buy one of everything. I could go into a store and say, I'll take one of everything.
Well, last week, Apple announced that they had $100 billion in cash just sitting around.
Extra cash.
Extra cash. Cash reserves, yeah. Right. And they were going to do, you know, some stock buybacks and some other things. But we thought, okay, forget about what they're doing with the money. What could they have done with the money? They could have given a $100 one-time dividend to every shareholder.
Well, they talked about giving a couple $100 worth of dividends over the course of the next couple of years. Right?
But $100 one time to every shareholder. They could have invested in 200 million iPads for every U.S. school and college student. They could have purchased 400 billion individually wrapped Twinkies. And I tried to purchase those and I didn't have enough credit.
This is all great, compelling stuff. So,
well, no.
But they did was probably smart for the bottom line. They didn't get to having $100 billion laying around in cash because they did dumb things.
Yeah, but the one that I said months ago, and nobody listened to me, they could have done the pre-purchase price for Facebook. They could have done the pre-IPO price of $82 million or $82 billion and purchased Facebook.
What would they do with it?
I don't know.
Turning it into Apple Book.
Listen, people, all these gaming companies are being purchased now. All the, you know, like Zynga. Zynga this week bought OMG Pop. I mean, why are those companies being bought up?
OMG Pop?
OMG Pop.
OMG.
Oh.
The fact that that's a game or is that a company?
It's a company. They bought them for $180 million. I mean, so why wouldn't Apple spend money to buy Facebook? That to me seems like a smarter move than Zynga buying OMG Pop.
Why didn't Zynga buy Facebook? I guess they
I don't know
$180
that they had
million,
the money.
Yeah, that'd be,
yeah, not enough dough. Plus another $30 million they had to buy for employee retention. And that's got to be kind of interesting. $30 million. to keep the people that are there.
Right, because what good is the game or the game company without the people who have sort of created it? And
so do the people get a payday? Do they get a major payday when a company buys them like that?
I'm guessing that that's tied up in people's employment contracts going forward.
Yeah, because I'd be like, man, that's a payday. I'll stick around with this company for a while.
Yeah, that's generally not the way those things work, I think.
Well, I could, maybe Facebook or Apple could buy us.
We're for sale.
Okay.
I don't know how
to
much.
To Facebook and Apple.
If you put the word billion in there, I'm for sure I'm good with it.
On the other side of the break, the New York Times is cutting back and you are paying for it.
I'm paying for it. Plus, Windows 8 has a consumer preview, but should you use it?
Oh, boy.
It's an easy answer to the question, no.
Here it goes again.
We'll tell you why.
Okay. Sit tight.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
This is not about politics, by the way, folks. It's not liberal newspapers versus conservative. No, the New York Times, if you're reading the online version, they're taking half off of the free part of the service.
Wait, what the heck does that mean? Half off of free? That means they're going to give us money?
No, they're cutting back. You're going to only get half of what you could read for free now for free.
Wait a minute. So what I got for free before, I get half of it.
Correct.
And that's not confusing.
Yeah, no. Check out the whole story, not at their website. They'll just charge you for it. Go to datadoctors.com/radio.
Delivering technology for your technology.
The Data Doctors radio program. I need
somebody. That makes sense, doesn't it?
I don't know. They can read the full story with us, not half the story. Paula asked us for some feedback. She wrote, I keep seeing ads for the Windows 8 consumer preview that I can download to test out, but I'm not sure if I should. What are your thoughts?
Oh, my thoughts are...
First, don't be confused by the word preview. It is not like a movie preview where you watch something and then you're done and you go on with life. What they're talking about is effectively changing the operating system on your computer from what it is to Windows 8. And read the word consumer preview here as super ultra duper beta,
yeah.
Meaning not for you.
Paula, for the last several weeks here on the radio program, it started with Ken and I about 3 weeks ago. He and I decided to download Windows 8, and we were playing with it. We love it. We like some of the functions of it. There are some things that aren't so great, but...
There's something that's confusing the heck out of people who have done this.
Yeah.
So we're all used to anything we want to do, we start with the start button, right? We click start, we go to programs, we do whatever we want to do. And in the Windows 8 world, if you get into any of what they call the Metro apps, these are the apps that are sort of full screen and cool presentation.
The new skin.
Right. When you get into them, you can spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to get back out of them and get to something else you want until you figure out that if you hover your mouse in the lower left, this start looking kind of button thing pops up that then gets you to where you want to go. But it can be awfully confusing to a lot of folks. And a lot of people are you know, the start whole idea has been so turned. We've all turned into these people who just natively go down there and click start and off we go, that without it, it seems really weird. That takes some getting used to. And there's actually a couple of funny videos out there where they took regular people, set them down in front of machines running Windows 8, and said, okay, go ahead. And they're all just, wow, this is really cool and this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And to watch them, it takes several minutes for most people. And some of them can't ever get it. They can't figure out how to now get back to where they were. And they end up doing all kinds of crazy things. And they click on the fish and they do all this stuff. And it's really, I hope Microsoft is watching and they solve this problem. There's already third-party add-ons that solve it to
right.
put the start button back. But It's a big shift, and a lot of people are freaking out about it.
As a Mac user, I got to tell you, with the interface, I was very comfortable with the interface.
Yes, the contextual menus that when you're in something, what happens at the top with the sort of the file edit, whatever, and it changing, that's very Mac-like.
Yeah. So it's got some benefits, and I think down the road it's going to be a great operating system, and it's one that I will use because I enjoyed playing with it, using it. I've been using it for the last couple of weeks. It has great potential. Wait till it's out of beta. Wait till it's available for mass market public release.
Keep it tuned to us, whichever channel you listen through or watch through, whether it's on Facebook or through this radio program or through our newsletter or all the above. We'll tell you when it's time for you to tiptoe into the water.
Hey, Brandon, you and I like concerts. We go to concerts every now and again.
Love concerts. I'm a big music fan.
Making concerts a shared experience is now possible. with a program called SwitchCam.
SwitchCam?
Yeah, so SwitchCam, you take your smartphone, you combine it with other smartphones that are at the concert, mix them together, and SwitchCam lets you, it's a website that has an app, that it's an interface that takes all of the concert footage from all these different devices and synchronizes them.
One show, it's almost like watching something back, and you get everybody's views of it that you can create your own sort of mix of.
So, for example, I watched John Mayer at the Hollywood Bowl, and there were 150 cameras there, smartphone cameras, that shot video. And as different segments of the song come alive, the video comes alive, and you can click and switch different camera views. It's very cool.
You're directing the video shoot.
You are. So it's called SwitchCam. You can check out how cool it is, datadoctors.com/radio.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Hey,
pretty slick.
Larry on Facebook asks, are hybrid hard drives just for laptops? So quick review before we get into answering the question. A hybrid hard drive is a hard drive that takes the traditional sort of spinning platter disk kind of thing, which has been around for years and years as an inexpensive way to add storage space for things, right? And it combines it with flash memory. And that's the kind of memory that exists in your smartphone, right? Or exists in your, I'm drawing a blank, your cameras,
sure.
Like those kinds of things. It's much more expensive on a per megabyte or gigabyte basis, but it's very, very fast. And so it combines those two to give you huge increases in performance, where you can buy hard drives today that are all what we call the solid state memory, right? That are fast, 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 but they're expensive as can be. Or you can buy the traditional drive and they're kind of slow, but this is a marriage of the two where you combine the best of both worlds and you get most of the speed benefits, but most of the price benefits of the traditional drive.
Now, in answer directly to Larry's question, the drives that are out there currently come in a small footprint. They come in a laptop footprint.
Right, the 2.5-inch size form factor for specifically made for laptops.
However,
you can easily take them, and with a simple bracket that costs about $5 or $6, you can adapt them for use in a desktop computer because the power connector and the data connector on them is the exact same, whether it's laptop or desktop. And so it's very easy, takes just a few minutes. In fact, we do this all the time for people in our stores. We can take old machines that are 4 or 5 years old and breathe huge new life into these things with a hybrid hard drive. And so whether it's a laptop or a desktop, absolutely, Larry, it can be done, and wow, will it make a difference.
Yeah, and by the way, the hybrid drives are just as fast, almost as fast, marginally slower than the SSDs, so a great way to go.
For about 10% of the cost.
Hey, when we come back, can you see everything on Google Maps?
Yeah, maybe not everything. And your mouse cursor, you know, that pointy little arrow thing? Has something changed? What causes that, and how can you fix it?
It's coming up right here on the Data Doctors radio program. Sit tight. To repair or not to repair? That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slow and sluggish startup of old, or to take arms by replacing
with
new.
What are you talking about?
Repairing or replacing? Which one should I do?
Well, it's easy to figure that out. You bring it to Data Doctors. We do something called a PC physical. It's $59. We go through all the hardware, all the software, and we help answer that question. Yeah. And the best part, we apply the $59 to either one.
Yeah, no more guessing.
I thought the only option was to replace.
Just because they're getting slow doesn't mean you have to replace
it. You know, sometimes they get really, really slow.
Yeah, but for most folks, you can save quite a bit of dough and not replace, repair instead.
Yeah, and who wants to start all over again and have to reload all your programs? And you know what? Buying a new computer is rarely the right solution. So figure it out the right way.
We can help. Just go to datadoctors.com and click book an appointment.
And find out whether you should repair or replace.
Repair or not to repair? Now, that's no longer a question.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Earlier in the program, we talked about Google Earth reuniting a man with his lost family, his long-lost family. Well, Google Maps, we all use it, you know, to get from point A to point B. But what are the 10 places you're not allowed to see on Google Maps?
Like maybe the White House or Area 57, stuff like
that? No, you can actually see those, but there are some that you can't. We'll show you. Just go to datadoctors.com/radio.
Tech knowledge for your technology.
Data Doctors radio program.
Hey, so, Ms. Spank, are you into the ink thing?
Depends who's got the ink and where on her body the ink is.
It could be a him, too, by the way.
I'm not into guys with ink. Sorry.
So ink, as in tattoos, Nokia, they just filed for a patent for a different kind of ink.
It's a
vibrating tattoo. So get this. They take the ink.
I'm sorry. The vision in my head right now while you are saying that is going wrong.
They take the ink and they load it up with some special particles that are not magnetized. And then you get your tattoo with these particles in the ink, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's under your skin. And then they, after it's in, they light these things up somehow with some special wind magic device. I don't know, right? And now these things are magnetized. And the idea is that they're set to be synchronized, like via Bluetooth, with your phone. And when your phone rings, that part of your body would tingle. This actually comes out of a different patent that they have, where it's like a piece of fabric that you'd wear over, like an armband or something like that, that could be set to sync and
sure
and you know, tingle or buzz.
Vibrate.
Or whatever, right? And so the idea is that it would be alternative ways to notify you of a phone call, because we all have the phone that we put in our pocket and set to vibrate, but it's not pushed up tight against your body, so you don't feel the vibrate. You miss the call, you look down, oh, dang, right? So the idea is that get it closer to your skin, in this case, get it under your skin, and
so
I don't know.
A couple of things about this, Brandon, that are intriguing to me, and yeah. It's kind of an odd thing. You know I like odd things, but this is intriguing.
We like you too.
In that, number one, if you have a tattoo, you know, we know some people who have ink on the back of their neck over here, you know, right there, this part of their neck.
Sure.
If that phone went off in the middle of the night, wouldn't it feel like you kind of had bed bugs in your body? Just, you know, imagine you're sleeping and all of a sudden.
Airplane mode, baby. Airplane mode.
Yeah, but it's just creepy. The other thing is that, again, depending on where the ink is, it could be kind of fun when your phone rings.
Oh, you mean for, yeah.
This is a family show. That's all I'm saying. Painting pictures with words. So
yeah, moving along now.
Moving along. Anyway, if you, it's still in the patent process, so it may or may not occur. You know, but they're trying to get this patented, and I think that's.
What's the downside if people want to ink up themselves and they want to throw it into vibrate mode? Hey,
can you imagine accidentally getting inked? Your whole body getting inked with that, and all of a sudden your phone rings.
I'm pretty sure that wouldn't be by accident. It would take days, hours, weeks, and months to. Ink you up.
Hey, every now and again, you come across an app that, by accident, or not an app that like we are going to talk about that and rave about. Last week, I came across an app strictly by accident because I needed to stop at the pharmacy and get something for one of my kids.
Okay.
And it's an app from Walgreens.
I wouldn't think that would be anything very exciting.
Let me tell you, Brandon.
Like a store locator or what else?
It's better than that. So if you use Walgreens for anything, prescriptions, what have you. The app has a couple of things that are very cool. Number one, it turns your smartphone, and it works on all devices, Android, iPhone, BlackBerry.
Windows?
I didn't check that. I'm sorry. I didn't check
that. You said all devices.
All of the devices that matter.
Go ahead. Nice.
Thank you. And you have a prescription in your hand, and you know the prescription has a barcode?
Yeah.
When you need to refill, all you do is push the refill button. It scans it, and it's ready for pickup at the same pharmacy or a different one that you select if you're not near your initial pharmacy.
Kind of cool.
It has reminders for if you have to take medication, and those reminders are pushed to you or fed to you, so you don't have to keep them on your calendar where it'll be kind of missed because it's part of the normal routine.
Right.
It will actually send you an alert, and you can set up all sorts of things. It is a very well thought out, very...
Yeah, most companies make an app just to have their logo in an app, and most people download these things and they don't use them. This sounds like it's actually something fairly useful for your everyday.
Yeah, I downloaded it. Especially
for regular prescription drug users, this is probably pretty killer.
Right, and if you take vitamins and other things and you want to keep a track of them. So anyway, I found this app by accident. I downloaded it, and I said, let me see what this does.
Walgreens isn't paying you to say this?
No, and it's a very cool app. So if you use Walgreens for anything and you have a prescription from them, you might want to go download the app and check it out yourself.
And if you're Walgreens and you want to pay us for saying nice things, feel free.
You can send the check to spanky@datadoctors.com.
Hey, Mary asks on Facebook, how do I get rid of the Facebook/share logo that seems to attach to my mouse pointer and follow me everywhere I point to? And she actually gave us a screenshot of what she was talking about.
Yeah.
You know the little arrow pointer cursor, and when you're clicking into someplace where you can type, it turns into that little sort of bar deal. And
right.
When the computer's thinking, it turns into the hourglass, and sometimes the hourglass pointer combo. And she's talking about that thing. Somehow, she got her pointer on her computer changed to the little F like share logo.
Oh, so basically now her mouse pointer, instead of having an arrow, has the Facebook share logo. So can you imagine how annoying that would be? Everywhere you move, this big bulky F share arrow, you know, is wandering around the screen.
I'm not quite sure how she got it changed to that, but luckily the unchanging, or the changing it back,
fixifying,
is fairly straightforward. Let's assume for a minute she's running Windows 7. Same rules would apply to Windows Vista. You can right-click on the desktop anywhere. Just find a blank space, not an icon, but somewhere where that picture of your dog is, right? Everybody has the dog, or the kids, sure, or the grandkids, whatever. Right-click, go down to Personalize. And then within that, there's going to be a couple of different tabs. We want to go to the, oh gosh, I'm doing it off the top of my head. I think it's the Appearance tab. And if I'm doing something wrong, somebody's going to correct me on Facebook.
Absolutely.
That's fine. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, because it's all from memory here at the moment. And basically, you want to change the cursor or pointer. And different versions of Windows will call it different things, but those cursors and pointers you want to change. And there's different ones for when the machine's busy and thinking versus when you're just doing your normal scrolling, that kind of stuff. And so you just want to change that away from that Facebook share thing to the normal, or a faster way would go and apply one of the themes.
Right.
You can pick the Windows Classic theme or pick one of the themes, and it'll reset all the properties, colors, that kind of thing, all at once, very quick, very easy. By the way, quick tip, before you change any of this stuff, there is you can save your current preferences. So if you ever want to go back to it, including your share button, yeah, you can do that.
That was very helpful. And you did that all from memory?
Yeah, well, I'm probably off a touch on one of those, but
just
I'm pretty close.
Wait till you hit your mid-40s. Hey, if you have a question anytime and we're not on the radio, you can ask us on Facebook.com/DataDoctors.
Also, if you missed any of today's program, you can always catch up, DataDoctors.com/radio, including downloading our podcast.
Hey, if you ever have a tech problem you need human help with, that's what we do all week long in our stores all across the country.
That's right. We can help you live and in person. You go to DataDoctors.com, click the store locator, and come right in.
We'll even do a free PC checkup while you wait. We can help you in our stores, in your home, at your business. We can even remote in over the internet and help fix it.
Until next week, or when we chat on Facebook, it's the Data Doctors, Brandon and Spanky. It's time to reboot. We'll catch you all next week.
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.